Giant Radio, original podcast.
The Search for the Wicked Witch. The soldier with the green whiskers led them through the gates of the Emerald City until they reached the room where the guardian of the gates lived. This officer unlocked their spectacles to put them back in his great box, and then he politely opened the gate for our friend. "Which road leads to the Wicked Witch of the West?" asked Dorothy.
"There is no road,"
answered the guardian of the gates.
"No one ever wishes to go that way."
"How, then, are we to find her?" inquired the girl.
"That will be easy," replied the man. "For when she knows you are in the country of the Winkies, she will find you and make you all her slaves."
"Perhaps not," said the scarecrow, "for we mean to destroy her."
"Oh, that's different," said the guardian of the gate. "No one has ever destroyed her before, so I naturally thought she would make slaves of you. Keep to the west, where the sun sets, and you cannot fail to find her."
They thanked him and bade him goodbye and turned toward the west, walking over fields of soft grass dotted here and there with daisies and buttercups. Dorothy still wore the pretty silk dress she had put on in the palace, but now, to her surprise, she found it was no longer green but pure white. The ribbon around Toto's neck had also lost its green color and was as white as Dorothy's dress. The Emerald City was soon left far behind. As they advanced, the ground became rougher and hillier. Before night, Dorothy and Toto and the lion were tired and lay down upon the grass and fell asleep, with the woodman and the scarecrow keeping watch. Now, the Wicked Witch of the West had but one eye, yet that was as powerful as telescope and could see everywhere. So, as she sat in the door of her castle, she happened to look around and saw Dorothy lying asleep with her friends all about her. Wicked Witch was angry to find them in her country, that she blew upon a silver whistle that hung around her neck. At once, there came running to her from all directions a pack of great wolves. They had long legs and fierce eyes and sharp teeth.
"Go to those people," said the witch, "and tear them to pieces."
"Woo! Are you not going to make them your slaves?"
asked the leader of the wolves.
"No,"
she answered.
"One is of tin and one of straw. One is a girl and another a lion. None of them is fit to work, so you may tear them into small pieces."
"Whoa!
Very well," said the wolf, and he dashed away at full speed, followed by the others. It was lucky the scarecrow and the woodman were wide awake and heard the wolves coming.
"This is my fight,"
said the woodman. He seized his axe, which he had made very sharp, and started to swing his arms, targeting each wolf one at a time. There were 40 wolves, and soon all of them were lying in a heap. When he put down his axe and sat beside the scarecrow, who said,
"It was a good fight, friend."
They waited until Dorothy awoke the next morning. The little girl was quite frightened when she saw the great pile, but she thanked the Tin Woodman for saving them and sat down to breakfast, after which they started again upon their journey. Now, the same morning, the Wicked Witch came to the door of her castle and looked out with her one eye that she could see far off. She saw all her wolves lying in a pile and the strangers still traveling through her country. This made her angrier than before, and she blew her silver whistle twice. Straight away, a great flock of wild crows came flying toward her, enough
to darken the sky. And the wicked witch said to the King Crow,
"Fly at once to the strangers, peck out their eyes and tear them to pieces."
The wild crows flew in one great flock toward Dorothy and her companion. When the little girl saw them coming, she was afraid. But the scarecrow said,
"This is my battle, so lie down beside me and you will not be harmed."
So they all lay upon the ground except the scarecrow. And he stood up and stretched out his arms. And when the crows saw him, they were frightened. But the King Crow said,
"It's only a stuffed man. I will peck his eyes out."
The King Crow flew at the scarecrow, who caught it by the head and threw it on the ground. And then another crow flew at him, and the scarecrow did the same to him. There were 40 crows, and 40 times the scarecrow repeated this until all were lying on the ground beside him. Then he called his companions to rise, and again they went upon their journey. When the wicked witch looked out again and saw all her crows lying in a heap, she got into a terrible rage and blew 3 times upon her silver whistle. Forthwith, there was heard a great buzzing in the air, and a swarm of black bees came flying towards her.
"Go to the strangers and sting them,"
commanded the witch. And the bees turned and flew rapidly to where Dorothy and her friends were walking. But the woodman had seen them coming, and the scarecrow had decided what to do.
"Take out my straw and scatter it over the little girl and the dog and the lion," he said to the woodman, "and the bees cannot sting them."
This the woodman did, and the straw covered them entirely. The bees came and found no one but the woodman to sting. So they flew at him and broke off all their stings against the tin without hurting the woodman at all. And as bees cannot live when their stings are broken, that was the end of the black bees. Then Dorothy and the lion got up, and the girl helped the tin woodman put the straw back into the scarecrow again until he was as good as ever. So they started upon their journey once more. The wicked witch was so angry when she saw her black bees in little heaps that she stamped her foot and tore her hair and gnashed her teeth. And then she called a dozen of her slaves, who were the Winkies, and gave them sharp spears, telling them to go to the strangers and destroy them. The Winkies were not brave people, but they had to do as they were told. So they marched away until they came near to Dorothy. Then the lion gave a great roar and sprang towards them. And the poor Winkies were so frightened that they ran back as fast as they could. The wicked witch could not understand how all her plans to destroy these strangers had failed. But she was a powerful witch as well as a wicked one, and soon she made up her mind how to act. There was in her cupboard a golden cap with a circle of diamonds and rubies running around it. This golden cap had a charm. Whoever owned it could call 3 times upon the winged monkeys, who would obey any order they were given. Twice already, the wicked witch had used the charm of the cap. Once was when she had made the Winkies her slaves and set herself to rule over their country. The winged monkeys had helped her do this. The second time was when she had fought against the great Oz himself and driven him out of the land of the West. Only once more could she use this golden cap. But she saw there was only one way left to destroy Dorothy and her friend. So the wicked witch took the golden cap from her cupboard and placed it upon her head. Then she stood upon her left foot and called out the charm. The sky was darkened and a low rumbling sound was heard in the air. There was a rushing of many wings. The wicked witch was surrounded by a crowd of monkeys, each with a pair of immense and powerful wings on his shoulders. The leader flew close to the witch and said,
"You have called us for the third and the last time. What do you command?"
"Go to the strangers who are within my land and destroy them all except the lion,"
said the wicked witch.
"Bring that beast to me, for I have a mind to harness him like a horse and make him work."
"Your commands shall be obeyed,"
said the leader. The winged monkeys flew away to the place where Dorothy and her friends were walking. Some of the monkeys seized the Tin Woodman and carried him through the air until they were over a country thickly covered with sharp rocks. Here, they dropped the poor woodman, who fell a great distance to the rocks, where he lay so battered and dented that he could neither move nor groan. Others of the monkeys caught the scarecrow and with their long fingers pulled all of the straw out of his clothes and head. They made his hat and boots and clothes into a small bundle and threw it into the top branches of a tall tree. The remaining monkeys threw pieces of stout rope around the lion and wound many coils around his body and head and legs until he was unable to bite or scratch or struggle in any way. Then they lifted him up and flew away with him to the witch's castle, where he was placed in a small yard with a high iron fence around it. But Dorothy, they did not harm at all. She stood with Toto in her arms, watching the sad fate of her comrades and thinking it would soon be her turn. The leader of the winged monkeys flew up to her, but he saw the mark of the good witch's kiss upon her forehead and stopped short, motioning the others not to touch her.
"We dare not harm this little girl,"
he said to them,
"for she is protected by the power of good, and that is greater than the power of evil. All we can do is to carry her to the castle of the wicked witch and leave her there."
So carefully and gently, they lifted Dorothy in their arms and carried her swiftly through the air until they came to the castle, where they set her down upon the front doorstep. Then the leader said to the witch,
"We have obeyed you as far as we were able. The little girl we dare not harm, nor the dog she carries in her arms. Your power over our band is now ended, and you will never see us again."
Then all the winged monkeys flew into the air and were soon out of sight. The wicked witch was both surprised and worried when she saw the mark on Dorothy's forehead, for she knew well that neither the winged monkeys nor she herself dare hurt the girl in any way. She looked down at Dorothy's feet and, seeing the silver shoes, began to tremble with fear, for she knew what a powerful charm belonged to them. At first, the witch was tempted to run away from Dorothy, but she happened to look into the child's eyes and saw how simple the soul behind them was, and that the little girl did not know of the wonderful power the silver shoes gave her. So the wicked witch laughed to herself and then thought, "I can still make her my slave, for she does not know how to use her power. Come with me and see that you mind everything I tell you, for if you do not, I will make an end of you, as I did of the Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow." Witch made her clean the pots and kettles and sweep the floor and keep the fire fed with wood. Then the witch thought she would go into the courtyard and harness the cowardly lion like a horse. It would amuse her, she was sure, to make him draw her chariot whenever she wished to go to drive. But as she opened the gate, the lion gave a loud roar and bounded at her so fiercely that the witch was afraid and ran out and shut the gate again.
"If I cannot harness you,"
said the witch to the lion, speaking through the bars of the gate,
"I can starve you. You shall have nothing to eat until you do as I wish."
So after that, she took no food to the imprisoned lion. But every day she came to the gate at noon and asked,
"Are you ready to be harnessed like a horse?"
And the lion would answer,
"No, if you come in this yard, I will bite you."
The reason the lion did not have to do as the witch wished was that every night, while the woman was asleep, Dorothy carried him food from the cupboard while they talked of their troubles and tried to plan some way to escape. But they could find no way to get out of the castle, for it was constantly guarded by the yellow Winkies. Dorothy's life became very sad as she grew to understand that it would be harder than ever to get back to Kansas and Aunt Em again. Now the Wicked Witch had a great longing to have for her to own the silver shoes which the girl always wore. If she could only get hold of the silver shoes, they would give her more power than all the other things she had lost. She watched Dorothy carefully to see if she ever took off her shoes, thinking she might steal them. But the child was so proud of her pretty shoes that she never took them off except at night and when she took her bath. The witch was too much afraid of the dark to dare go in Dorothy's room at night to take the shoes. And her dread of water was greater than her fear of the dark. So she never came near when Dorothy was bathing. She finally thought of a trick that would give her what she wanted. She placed a bar of iron in the middle of the kitchen floor and then, by her magic arts, made the iron invisible to human eyes. So that when Dorothy walked across the floor, she stumbled over the bar and fell full length. She was not much hurt, but in her fall, one of the silver shoes came off. And before she could reach it, the witch had snatched it away and put it on her own skinny foot. The little girl, seeing she had lost one of her pretty shoes, grew angry and said to the witch, "Give me back my shoe."
"I will not,"
retorted the witch, "for it is now my shoe and not yours. And someday I shall get the other one from you too." This made Dorothy so very angry that she picked up the bucket of water that stood near and dashed it over the witch, wetting her from head to foot. Instantly, the wicked woman gave a loud cry of fear. And then, as Dorothy looked at her in wonder, the witch began to shrink and fall away.
"See what you have done!" she screamed. "In a minute, I shall melt away, and you will have the castle to yourself. Look out, here I go!"
With these words, the witch fell down in a brown, melted, shapeless mass and began to spread over the clean boards of the kitchen floor. Dorothy drew another bucket of water and threw it over the mess. She then swept it all out of the door. After picking out the silver shoe, which was all that was left of the old woman, she ran out to the courtyard to tell the lion that the Wicked Witch of the West had come to an end and that they were no longer prisoners in a strange land.